not much time in her life until the end. They hold each other and cry that day. Their smiles seem to hide the tears that roll away. She says life now, when will she know he is there? All the pain inside never goes unknown by a savior who's waiting to care. Another lady sits by the bedside of a friend. Not much time in a life until the end. They hold each other and cry that day. For soon they know all the pain will go away. She says, thank you for sharing Jesus with me. If I'm not healed now, their whole I will be. If not you, tell me who would have told me of Jesus. If not now, when would I know he was there? All the pain inside never went unnoticed by a savior who's waiting to care. Oh, if not you, tell me who will tell them of Jesus. If not now, when will they know he is there? All the pain inside never goes unnoticed by a savior who's waiting to care. Oh, if not you, tell me who. Tell the world of Jesus.
Soul Sister Radio.
Rebecca Lawler Limited is the culmination of a lifelong dream for philanthropist and designer Rebecca Lawler. She designed her patented, unique glass heart, which is handcrafted by glass artists in Virginia. Placed in the center is a brilliant gem. The heart can be worn with the Rebecca Lawler Limited signature ribbon or an awareness ribbon of choice. To join the mission of the Hearts of Hope Foundation and add a Rebecca Lawler signature heart to your own personal style, go to RebeccaLawlerLimited.com. That's RebeccaLawlerLimited.com.
Hi, I'm Susan Shengazar. I am the advocate. Are you a healthcare professional facing burnout? Do you have a heart for the homeless? Have you ever been a victim of domestic violence or sexual abuse? You can learn from my experiences in my books, The Anointing of Mercy from the Heart of a Parish Nurse. Or I'll meet you at Winston Wall Street Journal's Journey to My Father's Palace, Destiny, Coincidence, You Decide. You can find these books on Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or Zulon Press, or Google me.
Hello, Soul Sister listeners. If you're learning and receiving from what you're being fed here on Soul Sister Radio, return the love by becoming a monthly partner of this station via sponsorship, monetary gift, or as a Soul Sister advertiser. Thank you for your support. Soul Sister Radio.
Welcome to Soul Sister Monday. This is Maria DiGiovanni, and I want to welcome you to Soul Sister Radio. And safety first is Murphy's Law with Tracy Murphy. Murphy, are you there?
I'm here. Hey, how are you doing?
We are good.
How was your trip? You just got back.
You know what? It's been an interesting ride. It's the first time I actually have gone to do some work such as Susan did. And trust me when I tell you, I miss her a lot right now, because going and rescuing or trying to save or help anyone in this type of a situation, especially when you're dealing with the FBI and local authorities, it was pretty intense, and I miss Susan more than ever. And, I guess we are called to do what we are called to do, and that's why we're here, Tracy, and we're here to take the reins, and I don't like it, but we're going to do what we're going to do.
Well, we have a really special guest today, and maybe there'll be some answers that come your way, too. But our special guest today, his name is Barry Goldstein. He's the author of Spiritually Afraid to Stay and the Domestic Violence, Abuse, and Child Custody. He does amazing work with the family legal system. He's a recognized author, speaker, and advocate. The book Domestic Violence, Abuse, and Child Custody, he co-authored with Dr. Mohanna, and it's an amazing book, and it needs to be known. Everybody needs to read it. The court system is failing these families, and he is probably, I would say, the superhero when it comes to advocates with the family court system. So if Barry Goldstein is on the line, I'd like to introduce him to everybody. Is he here?
I'm here.
Hey, Barry, how are you doing? Thank you for coming to the show tonight.
Okay, I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we just started the show probably 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, and we started it basically in honor of Susan Murphy Milano and the work that she does out there. And sadly, her life was taken, but we all have a voice, and we all can do the same work. So we created this radio show, and we'd like to have people that really know how, that are doing something to help the system and help people and save lives, come on and share what they're doing. And you were one of the top on the list, Barry, because you know what's going on right now. The in the news every single day, we're seeing women murdered by their husbands, and it's usually during a divorce and custody battle. And so I thought maybe we could talk about your book and some of the work that you're doing and what the issues really are that we're going through.
I'll be happy to. I must share with you, a couple of days ago I was on Facebook, and whoever has access to Susan's Facebook page was also on, and I was really tempted to say, "Hi, Susan, I'm glad you're back."
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that is amazing that you felt that. Well, that's what we're here to do, is share her work, because her body may not be here, but her spirit is. And if we can do anything to keep it alive and keep educating people, I know that, the world will change. But thank you for saying that. So, Barry, with the custody issues that are going on and the domestic violence that's going on, the children are being hurt and lives are being lost, and you're doing so much work right now. Can you share with everybody what you're doing and the reasons that you feel that you need to keep pushing this issue?
Well, I am excited about the new book that I wrote with Elizabeth Liu, which is representing the domestic violence survivor, which is designed to train attorneys to present domestic violence cases, because so many protective mothers are having difficulty finding an attorney that will really represent her, that's willing to present the evidence and who has some understanding of domestic violence. And so hopefully that will be helpful. And I must tell you, I've been really excited in the last, particularly the last few weeks. There is a lot of new research out about long-term health impacts on children who witness domestic violence, who are directly abused, who have other adverse and traumatic kind of experiences. And what they found is that children who witness domestic violence and suffer other trauma have more illnesses and injuries as children, and that continues as adults, and they have a reduced lifespan. And
interesting. And you know, probably other potential diseases or illnesses.
Right. I'm sorry?
Well, I could see how that would also make children susceptible to other illnesses later on in life as well.
Yes. And you know, the research that I'm referring to isn't coming from the domestic violence community. It's coming from the medical community, and it's really designed to figure out how doctors can treat, you know, particularly adult patients who often have unexplained, you know, pains and conditions, and it turns out that their history of childhood abuse is impacting that. But as I was doing this research, it seemed very clear that it's a very strong argument that the courts have to take domestic violence more seriously, have to make sure that children are not subjected to further abuse. And it really opens to a complete change in what we're doing. And so I think it's, this information is really exciting. In
valuable.
Terms of change things.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the research that's so powerful because, too, what you're saying with the children, it's also in the adults going on. And as children, they're not aware of what it's coming from, where an adult can maybe go back and recollect, you know, okay, well, I was brought up with this, but how does a child know if that's all that they're brought up with? So it's up to the courts or the professionals to actually recognize this.
Yes, I mean, adults are really supposed to be protecting children. That's really the job of the judges and the lawyers and the evaluators, and they're failing.
Right, and they're not able to. What kind of training, I mean, is it going to take? Because it just doesn't seem that they are educated in this area and understanding the depths and the dynamics. You know, it's your article today that just really, it just flipped the switch with me today because, you know, I see all these, the cases that the women are murdered, and it's right after this custody case, and it's the children then that grow up with these traumas that they have to live with for the rest of their lives. And then as adults, they're diagnosed with things like what I'm finding is fibromyalgia. And you know, so many other things. So, you know, for the health and safety of children, it really needs to be brought into the evaluation.
Yeah, there's a lot of diseases that are either caused or exacerbated by stress. And there are a few things that are more stressful than living with an abuser.
Right. And then having to stay silent about it to top it off. So these illnesses that can manifest from these sorts of traumas, what is it that the court system or the evaluators, where are they going to start from? Do they have the interviews? But I mean, what are they basing on their interviews on? Are they doing it off of Are they going to do it off of research studies, or, I mean, have they gotten that far in the court system yet?
Well,
would it come up with some sort of a plan?
I would say that the court professionals right now do not understand the extent of the harm. And it was interesting. I often talk about the relatively new study from the U.S. Department of Justice by Dr. Daniel Saunders, who looked at the training of evaluators, judges, and lawyers, and found out that they don't have the training that they need. And he said that they should have training in the impact on children of domestic violence on risk assessment, on screening for domestic violence, and post-separation violence. And in the study, a fairly high percentage of the professionals claimed that they had this training. But, you know, when you think about, for instance, the issue of the impact on children, you know, they knew, they, when they said they understood it, what they probably meant was that there was earlier research that resulted in courts being required to consider domestic violence, and that research found that children who witness domestic violence are more likely to engage in a wide range of harmful behaviors when they're older, and, you know, that really is harmful.
Right.
And so they think they understand it. Most of them are not familiar with this newer research, which really is devastating, because what they're saying is we're reducing the number of years the child is going to live because we're allowing the abuser to stay in the child's life and not reform his behavior. And that's crazy.
That's unacceptable. Right. That's just unbelievable. And the mental anguish and disorders and conditions that the children have, it's recognized in schools as bad behavior or you know, trouble concentrating or things like that. So I also think that somehow with the school system having, you know, some kind of a mental, I don't know, but I somehow if there's some sort of coordination between the reports from the schools, you know, and the children and the courts, I don't know how they go together, but it seems like the school has so much information that they don't know what to do with it, and they chalk it up to the child misbehaving or something.
I think that often happens, and remember that children react to violence in many different ways. And I think that's one of the reasons that it often gets misdiagnosed.
Right.
Because, you know, we kind of expect that the children will act out, you know, in really aggressive kind of ways, and some do, but there are many other ways that they will react.
Yeah, withdrawing or whichever, right?
I think many don't even react at all. I mean, I know with my own, the teachers would not have even known because she didn't. I mean, she was leadership counsel, straight A student. There were no signs or symptoms. I mean, she wasn't telling people. She was making sure people didn't know.
There's a wonderful example in one of Lundy Bancroft's books of a girl that reacted very much like that. She was really successful in everything, and she took care of her brothers and sisters, and she seemed to be really successful. And Lundy was an evaluator in the case, called her up in college, you know, to ask her about her experiences, and she just broke down in tears, you know, about all that she had been through and, you know, how much it hurt her inside, but she could never show it. And court professionals who aren't like Lundy would have missed that and would have thought that because she appeared to be doing well, that means that the mother's allegations about abuse were lies.
Right.
Very, very much so, because if they look like they're normal and nothing's wrong, then obviously nothing's going on and they can't be that hurt.
Right. So with the children or with the kids as they're growing up, if they're not taught to be allowed to express their emotions, they will also withhold it. And then, of course, the fear of the parent, they're not about to tell anybody. So that evaluation is really important, like what you're saying with Lindy Bancroft's evaluation. It's really important to look at the other more subtle signs, because they are there.
You know, the evaluators really don't have the training they need, and so they tend to believe the myth that women frequently make false allegations, and this is some of what the Saunders study found, and so that they're expecting the allegations to be false, and so that's what they find, and so very often Right. Very often the evaluations are counterproductive. We spend a lot of money on them, and they wind up getting it totally wrong.
Mm-hmm. And then too, when a woman is broken, and then they're in court with their abuser, and they are so intimidated, does that come across, incorrectly? Because it seems to me that I've heard of many women that are in so much fear, and whatever happens in court, it works against them.
You talked about the article that I wrote about the need to understand domestic violence dynamics, and I think that plays a big role in some of this. And there's a really good example. You know, sometimes the court professional will have gotten some training, and one of the things they might have heard was that domestic violence is about fear, and abusers will use various tactics to make his partner afraid so that she'll go along with whatever he wants. And then you have a domestic violence custody case, and the mother is, challenging her abuser, even challenging the court that's not protecting her children, and they say, aha, if she's challenging her abuser, she can't be afraid, must be a false allegation.
Right.
Domestic violence dynamics, they'd understand she is afraid, but
exactly.
She's afraid that her children are going to be armed, so she's summoning the courage to try to protect her children, which is what we would want any parent to do, and then they punish her by assuming that because she's showing this courage, that it means that her allegations are false. And it's the kind of mistake that court professionals make all the time because they don't understand domestic violence dynamics.
Right, and I really, really feel that is just killing our families, our children, and it's got to change because it's the escalation from that point, from that whole battle back and forth. Because once the court then say rules against the mother who has built up all this courage, then she's really a mama bear at that point. And and then there's the emotional energy that goes on between the two people that then explodes into these tragedies. Just over the weekend on the news, that there were three cases of a murder, and it was during the custody dispute. And it's just, why does it have to get to that point? If we could just recognize all this stuff sooner and really, really get that education out there. And that's where your book, Barry, is just so powerful. And all the work that you do is just so powerful because people will get it. And I see it happening, but, that we still have a long way to go. I don't know if it's going to be this generation, but, the amount of lives that could be saved just by learning how to evaluate, the families and the children, it can make all the difference in the world.
Yeah, it's interesting. There was a study that showed that in a recent two-year period, 175 children were murdered by abusive fathers involved in contested custody, and in many of the cases, the court gave the father the access he needed to murder the children.
Right.
And for our next book, I'm doing a second volume with Mohanna. We had Professor Diane Bartlow did a project where she went back to the communities where these murders occurred to interview judges and other court administrators. And the question that she had for them was, what have you done since the tragedy to reform the system to better protect children?
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting about the interviews. She spoke to a lot of judges, And the judges she spoke to tended to be the best judges, you know, because we couldn't require them to participate. So the judges who agreed to speak to her were, you know, ones who cared enough about domestic violence to spend time talking about it.
Wow.
And yet, the answer to the question was basically nothing. The court all assumed that the tragedy in their community was the exception. And so they didn't do the reforms. And as you mentioned, we keep having one tragedy after another. And at the recent Battered Mothers Conference in Washington, Lynn Rosenthal, who's an assistant to President Obama and Vice President Biden, spoke and invited questions. And I asked her about that, and she was talking about what can be done in terms of perhaps creating some grants to create some better practices in the court system.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, hopefully we can get this information out. I'm really excited about three or four of the chapters in the book, and the one by Dr. Bartlow is one of them, that I think could really provide some new information. Is the fact that there's all those murders and the courts aren't doing anything on their own to reform, you know, really says somebody has to, you know, come and create some incentive or disincentive to make
right.
them protect children.
Well, you know, as you're working on your book, and as you're, please feel free to post and share on our wall, and we'll post your stuff too, because like you said, this education, it needs to get out there, and we need to get this reform to happen like yesterday.
Well, you know, one of the things everyone can do, I recently set up a Facebook page, Barry Goldstein's Representing the Domestic Violence Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
We hope to have some discussions on there, and we certainly post a lot of good information, and I think in the next month or two we're going to have a couple of discussions about the new research I talked about before about the health impact on children, and
oh,
so
that's
I hope
excellent.
People will like the page and come by and, you know, take part in the discussions.
Oh, absolutely. This is fabulous. I would love to. Because, you know, I'm finding it, too, quite interesting myself with the health issues. And I was just talking to Star, who's on the phone with us right now, too. I was at the doctor today, and my doctor is having me do some blood work, but is diagnosing me basically with fibromyalgia. And I thought, well, what the heck is this from? And I've had such traumas in my life from past abuse, that he says what happens is, just like our brains with post-traumatic stress, we go into that hyper-arousal phase and we can't settle the you know, our brain down that place. Well, our nervous system, it does that in our bodies too. So with people with fibromyalgia, what happens is it could be just the slightest little trauma or injury, but it will trigger your nervous system back to the, you know, intense trauma, and your body will feel that pain. I'm blown away with this, and I'm so interested in doing more research in this, because, you know, there's so many health issues that seem to happen as a result or people that have been exposed to so much violence.
Yes.
And then if we can bring this awareness to, you know, everybody about the children, I mean, we could save them, you know, a torturous adulthood, you know, for everybody. But the mental health aspect is so important, but the physical illness too, and how it manifests, I feel like there's such correlation with the two. And yeah, I'm really interested to find out more about what you're finding, what you're learning.
Now, Elizabeth, who is in our chat room and I believe online as well, Elizabeth Brawley, now she has the fibro and hers is also from trauma, from abuse as a child and adult.
So, Barry, do you hear that a lot with women that have experienced so much trauma from their past? They have these kind of issues, you know, things like PTSD or the fibromyalgia, where then in the court system, it would affect their ability to take care of their children?
Well, certainly battered women and women who were abused as children have a higher incidence of a lot of these conditions, and most of them would not prevent them from taking good care of their children. As a matter of fact, in most of these cases, they always took wonderful care of their children, you know, during the relationship.
Right. So when the custody battles come up and then the abuser is then using those illnesses or those issues as a reason why, how does the court see that?
Well, that's just the problem. You know, courts are required to make decisions on custody and visitation based on the best interest of the child, which, mm-hmm. you know, state has certain factors that are supposed to be considered, and domestic violence is one of those factors, but there's a lot of other factors that are far less important that are often given as much or more weight than domestic violence, which is where they go wrong and why this new research is so important. Because if we understand that domestic mm-hmm. violence places children at risk for such serious illnesses, it means it can never be right to weigh any of the other issues more than issues having to do with the child's safety and health. And
I love
it. Should have been obvious that children's safety ought to be the first priority, but it hasn't
right.
been.
And that's really the change. Well, that's quite powerful, and I'm thrilled to hear this. Wow. I see potential. I really see potential. If we can get a grip on the emotional wellness, I mean, I do. I see a lot of light. Hey, Star, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, Elizabeth, you were saying Elizabeth is on the line?
Yes, she's on the line.
Elizabeth, are you here?
Hi, yes, I am. Thank you.
Hey, Elizabeth, do you have any questions for Barry while he's here on the phone? I know you're an avid listener and you're always around, and I just want to thank you for your support. And if you have anything you wanted to ask Barry, I just thought maybe this would be a great opportunity.
Yeah, but I'm thankful that I can be here and share. And there's so many cases out there that are coming to light, and I didn't even realize, you know, with the fibromyalgia, that it was related back to the traumas. And that I found out when I went to see my rheumatologist for the first time about 4 years ago, and she asked me what my history was. Which is a lot of abuse beginning in childhood, and the sexual abuse, the incest, and then domestic violence with three marriages and relationships in between, one I was nearly killed. You know, our courts have just not seen this. The judges, I don't see, are taking into account a lot of information and a lot of, I believe they really need more training. The
mm-hmm.
judges and those who are dealing with survivors and even in custody cases, because a lot of this stuff is not being taken into account. You know, they have, the studies have been done that, you know, women with the fibromyalgia syndrome are more likely to report a history of sexual or physical abuse than women who don't have it, who have not been diagnosed with it. And, you know, there's also the post-traumatic stress disorder, which, you know, it comes with a lot of co-occurring conditions. You know, I know that there's
so I have a question for you. You're a perfect candidate, I guess, to ask in a positive way. Now, as a child growing up, were you aware that you were experiencing such trauma? You witnessed it, and you didn't like it, and you experienced it in that, but emotionally, were you aware of what it was doing to you?
No, not as a child, and not even as a teenager. It took me a long time, really up until, in my 30s, when everything fell apart. It was like a nuclear meltdown. But as a child, I felt there was something not right, but I was so frightened to talk to anybody about it, and if I had been able to do that, I would have discovered that it was not normal and there was some serious stuff going on, and I didn't understand the extent of the damage that was being done at that time. And when I went to work as a nurse's aide, I walked in to hospice one morning and was greeted by my nurse that I worked under, and she looked at me and said, "Are you okay?" And I started to shake my head, yes, and I lost it.
Wow.
I've gotten into
kind of like what Barry was saying about the children.
Yeah. Took about 12 years of therapy. PTSD, I dissociated so much. So the DID, which was formerly called multiple personality disorder, I was diagnosed with that as well, which I've done a lot of healing and not dissociated since 2006, which is phenomenal. But extensive damage, just emotional. There wasn't really physical abuse, but, I would have rather, I think, had that than what I'd gone through. It was pretty hell.
Right. And you have children?
I have a grown son. He's 33, and I have four grandchildren now. But when my son approached the age, which I didn't know it then, but he was just a few years old, and I began to really freak out inside. A lot of having sleep throughout the year that my body would just gear up and freak out on. But then I discovered that in going back and going through therapy, that was about the age that, I had remembered first being abused. So,
right.
No wonder that we begin to freak out and become super protective, and just want to keep my hands around my child, literally, and shield him from everything that's there.
Right. That fear. Now, go ahead, Star.
We need to take a break so we can get a word from the sponsors. So now will be a perfect time, and when we come back, we'll continue with Elizabeth and Barry as our special guests.
Thank you.
Soul Sister Radio.
Rebecca Lawler Limited is the culmination of a lifelong dream for philanthropist and designer Rebecca Lawler. She designed her patented, unique glass heart, which is handcrafted by glass artists in Virginia. Placed in the center is a brilliant gem. The heart can be worn with the Rebecca Lawler Limited signature ribbon or an awareness ribbon of choice. To join the mission of the Hearts of Hope Foundation and add a Rebecca Lawler signature heart to your own personal style, go to RebeccaLawlerLimited.com. That's RebeccaLawlerLimited.com.
Hi, I'm Susan Shengazar. I am the advocate. Are you a healthcare professional facing burnout? Do you have a heart for the homeless? Have you ever been a victim of domestic violence or sexual abuse? You can learn from my experiences in my books, The Anointing of Mercy from the Heart of a Parish Nurse. Or I'll meet you at Winston Wall Street Journal. Journey to My Father's Palace, Destiny, Coincidence, you decide. You can find these books on Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or Zulon Press, or Google me.
Hello, Soul Sister listeners. If you're learning and receiving from what you're being fed here on Soul Sister Radio, return the love by becoming a monthly partner of this station via sponsorship, monetary gifts, or as a Soul Sister advertiser. Thank you for your support. Soul Sister Radio.
Hello. Welcome back, everybody. Barry? Are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Elizabeth? Okay, great. Hey, Elizabeth, are you still there? Okay.
I'm here.
I wanted to ask you about your son. You said you have a grown son and grandchildren, which congratulations on being such an awesome grandma, because I'm sure you're just loving it.
Yeah.
Your son, though, was he experiencing the abuse while he was in the home? Was he witnessing it, and did he experience it himself?
My son, sadly, was in the year that I was with his father, a year and a half, and that really floored me back then, too, because my son was born in the spring of 1980, so he was about a year old, and there were incidences of physical abuse and emotional abuse. I was so terrified, and at one point, I had crawled out the window, because I lived on the first floor when I was living up in Amesbury, Massachusetts, and I crawled out the window and went next door and tried to get some help and called the police. Well, when the police came and they brought my son's father to the door, and they wanted me to hug him and to make up. And I'm like, I was blown away. I'm like, are you kidding me? This man is abusing me. He's physically hurting me. He's emotionally assaulting me. Yeah, you know, and they had no clue. You know, I don't know. Did not understand, and I still don't. But yes,
right.
He saw it being, and in a relationship I was in, I started dating someone, and it was very briefly, but my son was almost 14, and we were living in Florida, and this guy had me by the neck, and all I could tell my son was, please go in your room, shut the door, don't come out, no matter what happens, don't come out, please don't come out. And, you know, I remember seeing darkness, but I didn't want my son to get hurt. But I know that
right.
he experienced, he's a secondary survivor because he saw what was going on with me, and that deeply affected
right.
him.
Right,
you know,
right. Like what Barry was saying, with how, and that's what I was kind of wondering is your son, because he's experienced this. He probably, this has probably been, you know, really tough for him. Is he aware of this emotional pain that he may be experiencing?
Well, I've always made a point to be very open with my son, and we talk a lot, and he can ask anything in the world, and I would answer it, and if I didn't know the answer, we would find out together. But he dealt with a lot of emotional pain through that, and not being able to help me, not being able to help his mom. So now what he does get very angry, but when he does, he walks. He will walk for 2 or 3 hours, and he works out
right.
his anger.
And that's how to deal with it. Wow.
Yeah, and his father had recently
but
passed away, but we had made peace at that point. But he had gone through a lot, and my two oldest grandchildren had also gone through something that, you know, I'm still fighting for, because there's just a lot there. But I know that they were, they're now 11 and 8, but in 2007, in June, they were 2 weeks with their mother in South Carolina when she had abandoned them for the second time. She came and got them. They actually lived with me for most of that year with their father's help. And they were exposed to a lot of drugs, a lot of abuse up there, and they kind of did some things that really had me calling CPS, and we were supposed to go to court. There was abuse there. Understand why the case, you know, cases got closed, because South Carolina did not cooperate with sending something to Florida. You know, it's just...
And that's going on right now?
Because I know, you know, they went through something, because their mother called me in a panic to come, can I come get them, because she had nowhere to take care of them, and Protective Services wanted to look in on them. I brought them, I drove up through the night to get them with some gas assistance from my pastor and my church. When I brought them back the following day, I went to give them a bath, and I turned around, and my then 2-year-old granddaughter went to have her lips wrapped around her 5-year-old brother, his genitals. And he freaked out when a teacher, we went to visit the last day of pre-K, and a teacher went out to get a camera saying, well, you weren't in, you know, our group picture, and we didn't realize it. Can we take a picture? And he's one for like, oh, here I am, take a picture of me, take a picture of me. But that time he dug his fingernails into me, kept me on the floor, and turned whiter than freshly fallen snow. Like, take me home, take me home, take me home. One of the teachers and I just kind of, we tried to work him out of that and calm him, but it was just, I've never seen him like that before, and it really, it still has me deeply wounded because they're still with her.
They're still with her right now. And what about their father?
Well, this is Florida, and it's mother's first, and, you know, one worker decided that she needed to learn to be a mother, even with all the abuse that was going on. So we're still fighting. We're still fighting. They are now
interesting. Do you hear cases like this, Barry? Do you hear cases like this often?
Do I get cases like that often? Those are my two grandchildren.
No, I was asking Barry.
I'm sorry.
When there's a grandparent and there's parents that the child's in an unsafe situation with the parents, and then the grandparent is trying to protect the children, is that a big issue?
It does happen on a regular basis. I mean, you know, the problem is we have way too much abuse in our society. So, you know, just statistically, this kind of problem is going to turn up. And, you know, somebody who's had that experience earlier in their life is going to be more aware of it and, you know, more likely to try to do something.
Right.
I think there's this tendency to initially think, oh, no, this can't be happening to me. But when you've been through it, then you know what it is.
You see it sooner before. Wow. Well, I think I admire you, Elizabeth, for trying to do something about it. One, recognizing it, and then two, actually fighting for this and doing something about it. You know, it is. It's about protecting our children. And I'm really sorry to hear that you're having these struggles. And maybe Barry's books, you know, like his Facebook page and maybe you can find some, you know, helpful information for that, because that's just got to be tough. So anyway, I think we're down to like the last 10 minutes of the show. And Barry, I wanted to make sure we put out there your information for people to contact you and your books. We didn't talk much about Scared to Leave, Afraid to Stay, but that's also such a great book. And maybe one day we can talk about that too. But would you like to just let us know where we can find you and learn more and buy your book?
Okay. The new book, Representing the Domestic Violence Survivor, can only be purchased through the publisher, which is Civic Research Institute. And so if you go to civicresearchinstitute.com and look for my book,
I did post it on our Facebook page. So if anybody's interested, you can go onto the Safety First Facebook page, and you will find that link right there for you.
And one of the things I'd like to mention there is that Elizabeth and I were able to convince the publisher to put up a section of our chapter about GALs, which talks about, it lists the best practices for GALs in DV cases and explains why those are the best practices. And anybody that wants can go to the site, print that article, they can share it with their GAL, they can share it with friends and family, they can give it to their attorney, and we're hoping that that'll be helpful. So, you know, you can go to that site and check it out. If you want to buy the book, that's great, but even if not, you can get that part of the book about the best practices for GALs. I also have a website with Dr. Mohanna, which is Domestic Violence Abuse and Child Custody.com, which has a lot of good articles and information. We have the Saunders study, which I talked about, You have the link to that and two Time's Up articles that I wrote about using the Saunders study, so encourage people to go to that. The emails for myself and Dr. Hanner are also on that site, so you can get in touch with me. And I'm also on Facebook, and as I said again, I hope people will like the page that we set up for the new book. It's Barry Goldstein's Representing the Domestic Violence Survivor. And, you know, we're going to have some, I think, interesting things in the next month or two.
Wow, this is really exciting.
Now, I did post your the link to your book and the link to your page in the chat room for anyone who's in there. I know Elizabeth said she's looking forward to reading your new book. And I also posted on Voices Amplified as well. So anybody who's listening and wants to find his book, I think it's listed on Tracy's page, my page, and it's in the chat room right now. So,
wow, great. Thanks. Thanks so much, Star. Hey, I wanted to ask you real quick, because, you know, a lot of people who don't understand, you know, these custody issues, that we're talking about, you know, because they are quite in depth. You yourself have experienced a lot of those kind of issues. And if you were to say to anybody out there that is in fear, that may be dealing with these sensitive issues, what would you say to them?
Believe in yourself. You're not alone. There's a lot of other protective mothers who are going through the same thing and who are wonderful people, which I think is really important to remember. There is help available. There are protective mother groups like the Battered Mothers Custody Conference. There are domestic violence organizations that are very supportive and helpful. And, you know, you should contact your local domestic violence shelter. You know, they can provide advocates. They might be able to offer ideas about local attorneys or mental health professionals who might be able to help you, and they might have resources. You know, unfortunately, the books that I've written are somewhat expensive, and not every protective mom can afford it, but it might be possible to ask the local domestic violence shelter to buy the book so that it could be shared with protective mothers and also local libraries to do that.
Great, great idea. And so, yeah, definitely ask your domestic violence shelters and your libraries in every community, because getting it out there is the first step and getting the education out there. Well, wow. Thank you, Barry. This has been such a great show, and I really hope that you succeed in all your endeavors, because you're just an amazing man, and you've done some wonderful things for families, women, and children out there. So thank you so much. Star, do you have anything that you wanted to add?
I think you about covered all that, but I am looking forward to the newest book, because I think I find that very interesting to see what people had to say, because I can't understand, with all the cases going on, how they think that they're the exception to the rule here. It's only happening there because it happens everywhere.
Right, right. Well, I think that this will open a bunch of eyes, you know, and maybe we can get this whole system to change. That's what it's going to take. Elizabeth, thank you for joining us tonight. It was wonderful to have you, and you know, anything that we can do to support you, please don't hesitate to ask. And
thank
if you guys, you're welcome. And if anybody has any discussions or conversations, you know, feel free to post something on our page. And if you have any questions or information that you're trying to find, we'll be happy to see what we can research for you. Again, I just want to thank everybody for coming on the show today, and I hope you guys come next week. And I think we've pretty much covered it all. So Thank you very much. And Maria, do you have anything for us?
I mute myself out. Actually, I did. I want to say thank you, Tracy. Thank you, Tracy, for choosing Soul Sister Radio and for this platform again. Susan is very important to me, as I know that she's important to you, and making sure that we get her tools out there so we can raise the volume and promote education together. That's what I think that we're called to do. Barry, what an exceptional guest you were for Tracy today, and I know that Star really enjoyed it, and Elizabeth, thank you for joining us today. And please, everybody in the archive, I want to thank you for supporting Tracy's show. Safety First is Murphy's Law, and we're going to make sure that we not only talk about it nationally, but we are definitely taking it internationally, because Tracy, you are being listened to on the island of Crete in Greece. So know that you have an international audience, and Miss Mary, who runs the Women and Children Shelter on the island of Crete, is very interested in everything that we're doing on this show. Again, you know where my heart is when it comes to law enforcement, officer-involved domestic violence, and the show is very important. So again, thank you so much for choosing Soul Sister Radio to have your show. Anything you would like to say, you have 3 minutes.
I'm just pleased that everybody was here to join us, and Barry, I'm so thrilled that you last minute chose to come on and share this powerful information. So that's it, you guys. What was that?
I said I enjoyed it.
Oh, good. Well, thank you so much, and I know it's late, so I'll let you get to sleep tonight. Over there on the East Coast, we haven't quite hit sunset yet. We're still waiting for the sun to drop. But anyway, everyone, have a wonderful night, and we'll be in touch. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Soul Sister Radio.
Rebecca Lawler Limited is the culmination of a lifelong dream for philanthropist and designer Rebecca Lawler. She designed her patented, unique glass heart, which is handcrafted by glass artists in Virginia. Placed in the center is a brilliant gem. The heart can be worn with the Rebecca Lawler Limited signature ribbon or an awareness ribbon of choice. To join the mission of the Hearts of Hope Foundation and add a Rebecca Lawler signature heart to your own personal style, go to RebeccaLawlerLimited.com. That's RebeccaLawlerLimited.com.
Hi, I'm Susan Shengazar. I am the Advocate. Are you a healthcare professional facing burnout? Do you have a heart for the homeless? Have you ever been a victim of domestic violence or sexual abuse? You can learn from my experiences in my books, The Anointing of Mercy from the Heart of a Parish Nurse. Or I'll meet you at Winston Wall Street Journal's Journey to My Father's Palace, Destiny, Coincidence, You Decide. You can find these books on Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or Zulon Press, or Google me.
Hello, Soul Sister listeners. If you're learning and receiving from what you're being fed here on Soul Sister Radio, return the love by becoming a monthly partner of this station via sponsorship, monetary gifts, or as a Soul Sister advertiser. Thank you for your support. Soul Sister Radio.